Hello, everyone. This is Food Talk executive producer Rob Pera. Danny will be conducting interviews here every day, talking with experts on food and agriculture, and discussing topics like the impact of COVID-19 on the food system, unsung food heroes, how climate change continues to be a threat to agriculture, and other pressing social and environmental challenges that impact farmers, eaters, and the economy. On today's episode, Danny talks with Emily Broadleib, clinical professor at Harvard Law School and director of Harvard Law School's Food Law and Policy Clinic, about protecting and promoting better wages for food workers in the COVID-19 crisis. Please take a minute to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. And also share this episode on your social media channels. Enjoy the show.
Today, I get to talk to a really good friend who I met because she was working a few years ago on food loss and food waste. And this is Emily Broadleib, who is a clinical professor of law, director of the Harvard Law School Food Law and Policy Clinic, and deputy director of the Harvard Law School Center for Health, Law, and Policy Innovation. She's just the coolest person. She knows more about food law than anyone I know, and she's been such a great friend to Food Tank and somebody I really admire and look up to. Before we begin, Emily, can you tell us how you and your family are doing during this really unsettling time right now in the world?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so, you know, impressed that you're doing this and so glad to be joining you. So we're doing okay. It's hard for everyone. I have a lot to be grateful about that, you know, my family's safe. We have a nice warm room over our head. And but we've been spending a lot of time with the kids, which is really fun, but also can be tiring. And especially for little kids not being able to get out of the house and do things, they have a lot of pent up energy.
Yeah, absolutely. So many people that we've been interviewing have kids at home. But I was just talking to so many people who, you know, are at home with either their college age kids or little kids, and just sort of trying to figure out how to, you know, make sure that they're engaged, that they're, you know, not fighting all the time, that they're eating meals together and that kind of thing. So it's a challenge for everyone. Emily, the work that you do at Harvard is so important. And I want you to describe the clinic a little bit. So for people who don't really understand what it is and what it does, could you give sort of a short description?
Yeah, for sure. So the clinic is basically an experiential learning program at Harvard Law School. And what that means is that we are teaching law students about the food system. So I teach them in the classroom, and we kind of go over all the laws that regulate the food system. It's actually quite complicated, which can make it interesting as a lawyer, but also I think really challenging to figure out how to, you know, affect change. So we look at the rules around food safety and the Farm Bill and growing food and environmental regulations. And then students actually work on real projects. So we have at any given time, probably about 12 to 15 different projects going on with clients that might be state agencies or like local food policy councils or nonprofit organizations that have come to us for help, either understanding the law on a specific topic and helping them figure out how to work within the law or figuring out how to make the laws better. You mentioned we do a lot of work on food loss and waste. The past few years, we've had a big group. We've run a coalition across law schools looking at the Farm Bill and trying to kind of disentangle that. And we do a lot on food access and kind of all different issues.
And so, you know, the big question sort of, you know, for all of us right now is, how is COVID-19 affecting your work? And how is it affecting sort of policies and regulations around food and agriculture that are already in place? Can you give some examples?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, in every aspect of what we're working on, it's had a really big impact. I would say, you know, just the most personal has been moving everything to doing remote work and trying to kind of bring along these students and keep them involved and engaged when we can't go out and meet with our clients. Like we, you know, typically are traveling a fair bit and out. One of our projects right now, we're working on policies to reduce sugar consumption, and we're working with a lot of state and local health departments. They're just completely, you know, they have a totally different focus right now, as they should, on this bigger public health crisis. So it's certainly made some of our projects challenging. On the flip side, we've just even the last 10 days had a bunch of really committed students and staff on my team responding really around the clock to different questions that are coming in, putting out different issue briefs. Like the first thing we did was a handout. When we realized all these universities were moving to remote learning, we knew that a lot of them have extra food. They have food. Like, they didn't know. It was very sudden at Harvard and other schools. It was like, right, within 3 days, everyone's going remote. So we mobilized really quickly to just get a handout out. We worked with Feeding America, Refed, and the Food Recovery Network, and just got this handout out that said, please don't close your doors without making sure that your food has a good home. Here are all the resources to use to find those. You have liability protection when you donate. Yeah. You can get tax incentives, you know, for anyone that's not, that's a for-profit entity. So it's, you know, I think we have really tried to mobilize and find the places where we can plug in and be thinking about policies.
Well, I mean, that's one thing I find so impressive about the work that you do, because you've partnered with so many great organizations. We'll have Regina Anderson from the Food Recovery Network on the show later this week, and being able to, you know, use your skills, you know, and help those other organizations, I think is really exciting, and have the students be really involved, you know, on sort of both sides. Food Recovery Network works with so many students, and you are too. So I think getting that sort of, you know, young, really motivated people who are either in graduate school or undergrad to be doing these things.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, I mean, when I look at the impact that I've had personally, part of it is the impact of the work, but a lot of it is getting students that are now out in the world working and, you know, working in like state and local government or on the Hill, pushing forward really better food policies. Like, that is really, you know, that's a big part of what I'm hoping my legacy will be, which is great. And to your point on partnering, I think it's, when I think about what I want to be as a lawyer and, you know, why I went to law school and got into law, it was really about finding ways to make the system that otherwise really only served people with resources instead really be democratized and be a tool for those that are vulnerable. So I think that the only way we can do that is partnering with like community groups and other nonprofits and using our skills to really layer onto the work that they're doing.
Well, that's such a great point to bring up, because I think, you know, the really vulnerable are now even more vulnerable than they were before. People who were food insecure or like hourly workers or, you know, undocumented workers and farm workers and slaughterhouse workers, all of these folks are in greater peril than they were before. And how do you, you know, keep the measures in place that, you know, work to protect them while at the same time, you know, handling this crisis? Do you have advice for people who are working, you know, to make sure that those folks are, you know, remain protected, but, you know, that we don't lose sight of their rights during this really critical time?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the number of people who are going to be needing emergency food, I think is like really, you know, overwhelming. So a couple of the ways we've been thinking about it, I mean, one is, I think you're right, we've been thinking a lot about hourly workers. Some of the hourly workers themselves are in food, like restaurants that are, you know, not open anymore. So we've been thinking a lot about that. You know, I think the other big thing we've been looking at is, since more and more people are going to need to get food at home in particular, how can we make sure as many people are able to enroll in programs, and that also for those who are, you know, either in home because they're sick or they're quarantined or because they're vulnerable, we're telling all these people that are older or that are have a compromised immune system to stay home. So we just did an issue brief we put out last night that was really just on this topic of what are the opportunities within food assistance programs like SNAP and WIC, et cetera. How can we more quickly make those able to have people purchase for home delivery? And then also, how can we partner with all these amazing organizations, like some of the food recovery organizations we work with and things like that, to get food delivered to homes? I think the first question is, how do we make sure that the programs can enroll people who need them? And like SNAP, for example, the last year we've done a lot of damage to the SNAP program, in my opinion. Cutting a lot of people. I was happy to see that the Families First Act that passed in Congress halted the application of the new work requirement rules, because you're going to suddenly have all these people who can't work. And then if you're not working, you're not able to be on SNAP. Like, that was just a crisis.
And so it's really hitting people while they're down, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think my hope would be they would halt it forever, but at least for now. So how do we make sure people can enroll in the programs they need and then meet them where they are in terms of, do the food need to be delivered? How can we get it to them? You know, those who have money can just go on Amazon or, you know, DoorDash or Grubhub, right, whatever, and order their food. But we need to make that possible for people who are, you know, who are vulnerable too.
Absolutely. And I mean, I know that you've been, the clinic has been writing about online EBT redemption and why that's so important right now, but so many people aren't connected to the internet. So, you know, even if they can use their benefits online, you know, we sort of expect that everyone has a laptop like you and I do, but that's just not the case, you know? So making it accessible for people or being able to, you know, have them call a number, those are going to be really important ways of getting food to people who need it the most too.
I think that's totally right. And making it possible to call. And then I think at least the bill Congress is looking at now, they've acknowledged trying to get more access to internet, you know, devices will still be an issue, but it's totally right. And I think, you know, one thing, if anything, this is shining a light on to everyone, hopefully, is how important our food system is and how much we should be supporting the people who work in our food system, who often are not well paid, are not, you know, like paid sick leave has been, you know, an issue right now. If we think about, you know, people working in restaurants and the food system and other work. But I mean, people like grocery workers, we need people in grocery stores. And I think if part of what comes from this is that we realize all of the people who are handling the food from the beginning on the farm to the end of the chain are really vital, and we need to, you know, treat them better, pay them better, give them benefits. That is really, I think, where we need to be.
Absolutely. And that's something we've heard over and over again the past week from people like Raj Patel. We talked to the Minneapolis Farmers Market expert this morning. We need to respect the people who like grow our food, who process, who distribute it, you know, who cook it, who serve it, who dispose of it. I mean, these people have been sort of unsung heroes. And I think we're realizing right now how important they are to everything that we're, you know, to all of us every day. I just, you know, hopefully, like lawyers and doctors, they'll get the respect that they need at some point too.
Yeah.
You know, so for people who aren't, you know, lawyers or who aren't involved in policy, what are your recommendations for them, you know, in terms of, you know, advocating for better rights for workers, for better, you know, safety and health regulations? Is it calling your congressperson? Is it, you know, running for office locally? What kinds of things do you suggest, you know, during this, you know, particular crisis right now and in a few months when hopefully things have, you know, gotten a little bit better, hopefully?
I think both of those are great starts, you know, but I think the other thing, it's a hard time to be connected to your community because we're all kind of stuck in our homes. But to the extent that people can take the time to figure out what's going on in their community, I think it will help to really understand what are the things you can advocate for as well. So, you know, I think a lot of, if you are networked, if you are plugged in, community groups have been doing things like figuring out neighbors that are in need of food and figuring out who can go pick up food for them, even at this really local level. So I think knowing what's going on, kind of spending the time to see what's available, whether you yourself can volunteer or whether you're understanding what those challenges are, you'll be able to be a good advocate, especially if you're being an ally for other vulnerable people. I think it's really important to kind of understand the story and be able to say, here's the things that we're hearing and here's how I can raise up those voices. I would say the other thing too is like we talk a lot in the food system, you know, obviously my tool is policy and law, but every dollar we spend in our food is also a statement about what we value. And so I think right now, you know, you mentioned talking with the Minneapolis Farmers Market folks, and we've been doing some work last week and since with the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition and just looking at what's going to happen to farmers markets. And in most places, they're allowed to stay open, even if there's some sort of, you know, shelter in place order. We've looked at a lot of those, but a lot of them are closing because it's just really difficult to do. So If you've been thinking about joining a CSA or some sort of farmers program, that you're able to do now is, I think, as good a time as ever to kind of think about where you're spending your money and putting it into those places that that are not having their same markets anymore. And we don't want to lose all of our small local farmers.
Absolutely. I mean, so many of these like consequences that we don't even know are going to happen, but that's a big one, you know, the effect on farmers markets. And what the folks in Minneapolis are doing is, you know, building a mobile farmers market system where it's all sort of, you can buy what you want online, you have a choice, and then you go pick it up and it's all very sanitary and, you know, farmers aren't exposed, the eaters aren't exposed. You know, there's really interesting ways of doing this that I, you know, people are being very, very creative right now. And no, this idea of unintended consequences, though. So you mentioned this project that you were working around on sugar, and you know, I think you're talking about sugar taxes, maybe. And you know, I was talking to a physician last week about COVID-19. You know, and he's very interested in nutrition. He said, you know, what might happen from this event, you know, this crisis, is that people are going to be eating more and more unhealthy foods. When we were just trying to, you know, just beginning to make strides on things like preventing diabetes because people understood, but the food that's going to be available is not always going to be the most healthy food at food banks or that people can purchase. And, you know, the unintended consequences side of this, you know, as a lawyer, how, you know, what do you think is going to happen down the line 6 months from now? What kind of lawsuits, what kind of laws are we going to have, you know, to have in place to protect people?
That's, you know, I have a similar fear, just that, you know, this, I think we've been hearing, I think it's mostly true that we have food, there's not, you know, supply chain issue, but I think that there are going to be challenges, especially we've heard from producers or food processing, things like that, where they're trying to reduce the number of people there at any time and keep them spaced out. And to do that, it slows down the amount you can produce. So I think you're right that, you know, for a variety of different reasons, whether job loss, people staying in their homes, like lack of availability of things at food banks, things like that, people might not eat as healthy. I think what I'm trying to keep in mind is like, how do we think about this in terms of the you know, what are the most immediate things we have to handle? And then what are the ways that we can use this as like an inflection point to think about how do we rebuild things in a better way? The other thing that's been interesting to me in the nutrition side is that I think one thing we should be talking about is that when you look at the, you know, the people who are at risk of severe illness from coronavirus has been people who are older and the people who have pre-existing health conditions. And the majority of those are actually diet-related conditions.
Right.
So I think like it's a really good time to also be talking about, all right, like, you know, everyone has to eat and it's really important to kind of make sure that the food is distributed and goes around. But it's also a time to be thinking a little bit more for those who are able to, and also for food banks, et cetera, to make sure that they're giving things out and in ways that everyone's getting some healthy items. And that's a place I think government needs to step in too, to make sure that we're purchasing more. The Families First Act did give a lot more money to the Emergency Food Assistance Program, which is where USDA buys food like from around the country and then distributes it out to food banks around the country. So like we know that generally is things that is you know, purchase like fruits and vegetables and other things like that. So I think that there's already some effort to get that out there.
Sure.
But the other thing, like we've done a lot of work the last year and a half. One of my pet projects has been around trying to change the education for physicians so that all doctors learn more about food and diet.
Right.
So we were just having a fair amount of progress just the last few months. And my hope is, again, you know, right now doctors are really consumed with other issues, but that we cannot lose track of having this discussion about it's still really important that we are giving people good advice about what to eat and then helping make sure that they get it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you're reminding me that there's a lot of positivity that could come from this. There's lots of opportunities. There's lots of great work that's still being done by you and your students. Where can people find more information out about your work?
So our website, which I would say is you know, like most academic websites could be probably easier to use. Our website's a really good place to go. Do you want me to say it or do you want to post it after?
We'll post it after on our website. I'm looking at it right now. It is very complicated. So it's easier to probably Google Food Law and Policy Clinic at Harvard. We'll give it out on our website. So Emily, the reason you and I originally met was because of all the amazing work you did around food loss and food waste. And so before we end our discussion, what are you doing, you know, in your house to like make really good use of the food? I know you and your husband are foodies. What are you cooking? What are you doing to make sure that like you don't waste the food that you have and still have really delicious and healthy meals?
It's a really good question. So I think this is a good time for a PSA. So the way we first met was that I was doing work on the date labels on food, and at the time we were working with Natural Resources Defense Council and really put out this research that said those dates really don't mean that food isn't safe. So I think it's a good reminder. Like, we know all these people are going out and buying all of these foods. A lot of people are buying shelf stable things because those are things that they think will last. Don't throw those things away. If they're, you know, there's almost all foods with the very small exceptions of like a couple ready to eat products are still safe after the date. If they aren't, you know, they might not be tasty anymore. You know, they may get stale. That's fine if you really don't want to eat them, but you're not going to get sick. So we're trying to practice that as well. You know, make menus. We have, like lots of people, we bought a fair amount of stuff. We're trying to reduce our time going to the grocery store. So we're trying to buy the things we need and then making menus and schedules so that we actually use that stuff.
That's great.
But I actually have to say the funny thing for me, even though I'm the one in the food world, is my husband is an amazing cook. So he actually does all the cooking, which is like my dirty secret. But that's how I make it all work between like teaching and writing and this kids and all of that, is that I have a secret,
he's your secret weapon.
But yeah, so I think for people to remember that too. I'm trying to think if there's other, we've also been trying to get out more information to folks around where they can donate. And I think a lot of groups are trying to put up websites. So today I was on a call with ReFed, Ample Harvest, and then also Hunger Free America. I'll give them a shout out that are doing some work mapping all the places that you can donate and then receive food and things like that. So I think, you know, if we do end up finding that we have extra, if there's things that we're not going to eat, that making sure the things that are in packaging and that we can donate, and then also recommending to the local businesses that we go to do the same thing.
Absolutely. Emily, you've mentioned some great websites, and I just want to go through a few of them so people can Google them, and we'll try to provide them on our social media and website as well. You mentioned the Natural Resources Defense Council. They have a lot of information about what Emily was mentioning about expiration dates and labeling a food. That's really informative and will help you make better decisions before you throw something away just because you look at the date. You mentioned Ample Harvest, the Food Recovery Network, our great friends at ReFed who are doing such amazing work on sort of mobilizing companies around preventing food loss and food waste. I'll try to remember the others, and of course we'll include your website. Thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. I hope you stay well. Just a reminder that this discussion will also be on our podcast, Food Talk with Dani Nierenberg. Again, we'll have more information available on our website, foodtank.com. Again, that's foodtank.com. Thanks so much, Emily. Hope to see you soon and healthy and in person.
Thank you. You too. Bye. Stay well. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, I'm sorry about the doorbell.
Was that what that was? I couldn't figure out what happened.
Our Ring doorbell, yeah.
There were a couple times that my thing said my internet was unstable, and then I was like, can she hear me? I can't figure out.
I heard you the whole time. I hope, the audio.
Like, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay.
Great.
No. Okay, got it. I know. I purchased like some sort of new device to make my internet get around the house better, because when I'm teaching class, it's super awkward too. Like if I'm for 2 hours and if it goes out, like what are the students supposed to do? Just look at each other?
Right.
So,
right. Yeah.
But this is so great. I'm really, really.
Oh my gosh. I'm so glad I got to see you. My husband just passed off. Awesome. Okay. Get whatever they left at the door.
All day I waited for it.
6 hours.
5 minutes. But it has been hard. I mean, I was thinking before when you were saying all the flying around. So we've been doing this big global project the last 2 months. So it's actually awesome. We're just struggling now to figure out how to launch it in the midst of all this. So we're going to be launching we're doing a comparative analysis of the laws on food donation in a bunch of countries.
Wow.
So the first set of countries is Argentina, India, Canada, US, and Mexico.
Oh my God.
We've been traveling. We're going to, but like, it's hard to figure out how do you publish, launch this website and publish these guides right now and get any traction in the middle of all this stuff.
I know, it's crazy. It's crazy. Again, if we can be helpful, I don't know how I can be helpful to you, Emily, but like if I can, please let us know and we'll
love it. We can love, yeah. Maybe we'll send you when we have like press release and stuff and everything like that. If you post it, that would be great. If there's anything I can do too, like what's the best way to share not just my podcast, but like the link to the whole series? I feel like I sent one on put one on Twitter, but we could put on our other social media and stuff like that too.
Let me ask Bernie if there's a way that he thinks that we can do that easily. But yeah, I'll have him reach out to you if that's okay.
Yeah, for sure. Of course.
Okay. Great. And thank you. I really appreciate that.
For sure. So good to talk to you. Take care. Hopefully see you in not 2.5 more years.
Yeah, I'm in Baltimore now. Yeah. So not that far. And we were in Boston, and I know you tried to come to our event that one time, and I know kids, it's hard. So, but we'll figure out a time.
Okay. I would love to.
All right. Stay well, friend. Okay. Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to Food Talk with Dani Nierenberg. Please rate, review, subscribe, and share the podcast. Make sure to return to foodtank.com every day for original reporting and analysis on the most pressing issues impacting our food system.